Despite what Mike told you, I'm not going to give you the answer to the problem. But I'm going to give you the answer of someone who has the answer. All my life, I've heard this statement. I remember when, and it's never been as bad as it is now. I remember that in the 80s. I remember it in the 90s. I remember it in 2000 when they thought the world was going to stop when we hit 2000 and that all the banks were going to go under and not, and it was going to cause chaos throughout all the world. You remember all that. Midnight on September 31st. Nothing happened. And now, COVID, world pandemic. God sending us a sign. 9/11. God sending us a sign. We've got enough. And the economy is broken, and this world is broken, beyond repair, and it can't be fixed. And all the doomsayers came out to tell us that the world is about to come to you. And this. It just happened that the world was broken. I've got news for you. The world has been broken since the days of the Garden of Eden. And it has not gotten any better. And it's never going to get any better until man turns to the only solution that can fix the problem. And that's what he does not want to do. And that is to turn to God. I don't mean just in a haphazard way. I don't mean just for a show. I mean to truly turn to God and seek the solution that He can have. I want to talk to you about a few moments, wisdom from the book of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, about the world is broken. Now, I don't want you to take anything from the pictures you see. All this tells you is when I put this sermon together. I'm not making any political statements. I'm not a politician. I'm not trying to be a politician. I don't have a voice. I don't have a position. And that's not what this is about. This is about how we live in a broken world. We live in a broken world. We live in a world that is consumed with satisfying self. We live in a world who has no respect for God, no respect for His word, and very little respect for human life. And we live as God's children, trying to show a better way, trying to point them to the solution, trying to show them that God is the only answer to the misery of problems that this world faces. But yet they are turning a deaf ear. And ladies and gentlemen, I want you to understand one thing. If you do not think, do not believe that there has been a constant effort over the last decade to remove God from our consciousness, you are asleep at the wheel. They are trying to eradicate God from our consciousness. They are trying to take God out of everything. They are trying to take God out of our mind. But you see, that's a mistake. Because God's the only thing that can make what's wrong right, and can make what's crooked straight. And God is the only one that has the answers to how to fix the broken world. And the books of wisdom of Proverbs and Ecclesiastes gives us a lot of wisdom if we would put it to use, if we would use it in how we deal and not get overwhelmed. I'm afraid many of my brethren during this pandemic have been overwhelmed because how they have looked at it and how they've handled it. And I'll talk about some of that during this lesson. And so last summer, as I watched, as we were when the pandemic first began, and I saw the pandemonium in the streets, I saw the things that were going on, the chaos, the unruliness, just an excuse to be ungodly and to do evil. But I'm thinking the whole time I'm watching it that we have just played into the devil's hand. We have just allowed the devil the upper hand. And it's time that we take it away from him, especially those of us who claim to be children of God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 5, and 5 through 16, here's what the wisdom writer said. He said, as he came from his mother's womb, naked shall he return, to go as he came. And he shall take nothing from his labor, which he may carry away in his hand. And this also is severe evil. Just exactly as he came, so will he go. And what profit has he who has labored for the wind? Sin has reached everywhere in the continent. There's not a place you could go. There's not a culture of people that you can turn to. There is no place that has not been touched by the disaster of sin. Every evil thing, every tragic thing, every ungodly thing, any evil that you want to come up in your mind can all be traced back to one place, to one thing, and that's sin. Sin is the cause and the root of all of it. And it is because of sin that it has reached every part of our world and our continent that the only solution to sin is God. There is no other solution that'll work. No government, no democracy, no culture, no group of nations, no group of people are going to fix the problems that sin causes without God being in the position that we turn to first. There is an evil which I have seen under the sun and is common to all men. I don't like sin because I don't like the thing that sin produces. It produces unrest. It produces ungodliness. It produces pain. It produces misery. It produces anxiety. It produces everything that makes this world unattractive for me to be here forever. The things of this world are things that make heaven look better and better and better because this world is corrupt, and it's broken. It's not the way God created it. God created, can we all go back for a moment in our memory and go back to Genesis, to the creation account? And do you remember what God said after he created everything in 6 days? Do you remember what he said in Genesis 1 and verse 31? He said he looked at all of it, and it was good. It was very good. Okay. What happened? What happened from that time till now? You see, it wasn't God that made it bad. It wasn't God that made it evil. It was when sin entered in. And when sin came in Genesis 3, the world would never be the same. God knew that. God knew that before he created it. And so he sent a solution in his plan of his son, in order to do for man what man could not do for himself, and that is to save him from himself. For there is not a just man on earth who does good and does not sin. Nobody can say they don't have any sin. Everybody has sin. Everybody is sin. Everybody will sin. That's not because they can't help it. It's because they yield to temptation. It's because they give in. It's not because they don't have the way to resist it. They do, but they won't take it. They have a way of escape. 1 Corinthians 10:13, God promised that. They won't take it. So you can't blame God, because God can tell you how to avoid it. And then God can tell you once you get yourself in it, he can tell you how to get yourself out of it. So there is a solution. But we don't want to take the medicine, because we don't like what it calls upon us to do. In the day of prosperity, be joyful. But in the day of adversity, consider. Surely God has appointed one as well as the other, so that man can find nothing that will come after him. You know what Solomon is saying? He's saying it's been bad now, it'll be bad again. There'll be days when it's good, and there's going to be days that are bad. There are going to be days when you're on the top of the mountain, and there's going to be a day when you feel that the mountain's falling on top of you. That's going to happen. It's going to happen, and it's going to continue to happen. It's a cycle. Because men have erased God from finding the solution to their problem. And it's a cycle that will ever repeat itself. Now, that would be depressing enough, yet we can live above it. Even though the world is broken around us, it does not have to affect us. Listen to what I'm saying. The problems of the world do not have to become the problems of the Lord's church. This last year and a half, we have forgotten that. We have forgotten that we're not to be people that are divided. I thought we were people of compassion, people of love, people that are supposed to be trying to put on the spirit of humility, the spirit of servitude, the spirit of becoming more like our master. Isn't that what the Bible teaches us? I wanted to remind you of something in Proverbs. What is the one thing of the seven things that God hates? What is the last thing in that list? Let me remind you, those that sow discord among brethren. And you know what? We've always assumed that that means from people that would try to divide the church from without. No, brethren, that means from problems that come from within. People that try to sow discord among God's people. It's one of the things that God hates. And the reason is not important. What's important is the result of what happens. What then? Are we better than they? Not at all. For we have previously charged both Jews and Greeks that they are all under sin. And it is written, there is none righteous, no, not one. There is none who understands. There is none who seeks after God. Now, of course, he's talking about the sinner who does not look to the only solution that he has. It affects everyone because everyone has the disease. Ladies and gentlemen, we all got the disease. Whether we all are recovered, we're all recovering from the disease because we all had the disease. We all had the disease of sin. And we all needed the remedy that only Jesus Christ could provide. And whenever that sickness comes upon us, the only remedy that will fix it is God. He's the only remedy to sin. Period. No negotiation. God's the only answer to it. And there never will be another answer to it. No matter what stage or whatever's going on in the world, the solution is always the same. You have to turn to God. You're going to have to look to Him. Bad things happen to good people. I don't know why. I don't know why 3,000 individuals went to work on September 11th, 2001, like they did every day. And expected to come home to their families and to get on with the life and the plans that they've made with their families, with their children, with their grandchildren. And at 9:30 that morning, all that changed. It didn't just change for those 3,000 people. It changed us. It changed the world when those events took place. And it's one of those things that you're always going to remember where you were when those planes hit the tower. I don't know why those things happen. I don't know why a woman who is a mother who has two young children straps it in the back seat of her car and drives it into the lake to drown her children to get at his wife, her husband, who is having an affair with another woman. Why did things like that happen? What did those children do? Nothing. They do anything. Bad things happen to good people. Folly often exists in high places. The Bible teaches us that. And bad things will continue to happen. Let me give you an example of what I'm talking about. A number of years ago, when I lived in Peru, Indiana, there was a young woman. They were expecting their first child. She was taking food to a shut-in Saturday night that just had recovered from surgery, and they were expecting their first child. She was 8 months pregnant. On the way home, it was at dusk. On the way home, it was turning dark, and it started to rain. And while she was coming home, a drunk crossed the yellow line, hit her head on, killed her, and the baby died at the hospital. The driver, who was intoxicated, was his third DUI, I think, he didn't have a scratch. And he was in the hospital. But on the way to the hospital, he had a severe reaction to something, and he went into a coma. And he was in a coma for 6 weeks. When he awoke from the coma, who was sitting beside his bed when he woke up? The father and mother of the girl, the father and mother of the young woman that was killed, their daughter and their grandchild. And you know what they did? They converted that man to Jesus Christ. He went to jail for 10 years for what he did. Today, he's an active member of the church, and he just was appointed a deacon. Could you have done that? That had been your daughter? That had been your grandchild killed? Could you try to lead him to Christ? Could you care enough about his soul that you would try to lead him to the only thing that can make him well from what he had done? You know, I asked myself that. I know what the answer is, but could I do it? You can do it if you love the lost. You can do it if you love like Jesus does. You can do it if you love the soul and understand what predicament he's in. Yeah, you could do it. It wouldn't be easy, but you could do it. That's an unfortunate situation that happens every day. Oppressive acts are committed, and the innocent have no recourse. In Ecclesiastes chapter 4, I want you to look at verse number 1. Ecclesiastes chapter 4 and verse number 1. I got the same problem that Clifford has. I got a new Bible too. I'm reading through it, and the pages stick together. But in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, and I want you to look at verse number 1. Then I returned and considered all the oppression that is done under the sun. And look, the tears of the oppressed, but they have no comforter. On the side of their oppression there is power, but they have no comforter. You know, if you just consume yourself with what goes on in this world, it'll eat you alive. It'll just depress you beyond measure. You know what I told the congregation where I preached at in Harrisburg, Kentucky during the pandemic and during the summer? Turn off your television. Turn off the radio. Quit feeding into the frenzy. Leave it alone. Read your Bible. Check on your neighbor. Check on each other. Talk to each other. Spend time with your kids. Spend time with your family. Quit feeding into the frenzy because it's just going to destroy you. That's what Satan wants it to do. He wants it to disillusion, to cause us to be deluded, to think that there's a delusion, that we got a solution to all this. And we just feed on it. And it just makes us more anxious and angry and upset. And we wonder why there's no happiness in our life. Because we're focusing on the wrong thing. Justice takes too long, so in long fact, it encourages evil. You know what Ecclesiastes 6 verse 11 says? Or 8 verse 11? A verdict that is not speedily enacted is worthless. Why would you sentence a person to do something and 30 years later it's still not done?
You know what? There's no fear in the law. There's nothing that's going to happen. If you take the law and you take the teeth out of the law, there's no fear, and the lawbreaker is going to continue doing the things that are against the law because there is no reprisal. It's common sense. It's like telling your child. I remember a number of years ago, there was a young boy in class, and he came out, and they were in the worship service, and he was a little rambunctious, like my young son used to be when I was raising him. And his mother said, "Now, Tommy, if you don't be quiet, I'm going to take you out." He was okay for about 5 minutes, and then he started acting up again. And she said, "Now, Tommy, I want you to stop or I'm going to take you out." And I'm standing by the back. I forget why I was back there. And he told her again, and he looks at me and he winks at me. This kid's about 7 years old, I think. He winks. He goes, "She doesn't mean it until she gets to the fourth time." You think kids are stupid? You think they haven't got it figured out? You don't think they're paying attention? You know what I'm forever grateful for? My parents, they follow through with what they told me they'd do. It didn't warp my personality. I wasn't abused as a child. It taught me respect for authority. And you know what? That helped me in school. That helped me in the military. You know, when all those drill instructors were yelling and screaming, and I thought, "Yeah, I'm used to that. That's okay. It didn't bother me any." I understood it's part of the game. I understood. But I also grew to understand that there was a line. There was a right. And there was a wrong. And when you did the wrong thing, there was consequences for it. We have not learned that in our world. We got a generation that believes there's no consequences to bad behavior. I got news for you. There will always be consequences. They may not be lived out quickly, but they will show themselves. Yes, you are free moral agents. You can choose to do whatever you want to do. But believe me, there are consequences. And they will come, and you will not be able to stop it. And so we need to understand that it's always been that way. No satisfaction. What will not provide satisfaction? No satisfaction in just living. If you're just trying to live life to get by, and you're just trying to do the best you can and make it one day at a time, there's no satisfaction in that. There's nothing to look forward to if life is just a daily grind, if it's just getting through one day to the next day, and that's how you live your life, and that's how you look at it. There's no satisfaction in that. And that's what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes 1, 2 through 11. You know, it's a monotonous cycle. It just keeps going. It's saying, sun came up today, it'll go down in the evening, it'll come up tomorrow. And it's just, it talks about the water going in and out and the sun rising and setting. It's just a monotonous cycle. And if you're just looking to get by, there's no satisfaction in that. It's not going to bring you any relief. It's not going to make you happy. Lord willing, Friday night, we're going to answer the question, will sin make you happy? A lot of people say yes. Sin will make you happy. Well, we'll find out Friday night if it does. No satisfaction in knowledge. You know what? I'm not against higher education. I had higher education. There's nothing wrong with education. But all the education was not, and you'd be the smartest man in the room, but if you think you're smarter than God, then your education didn't help you. I know people that are so educated, they educate themselves right out of God. They don't know God because they educate themselves out of Him. They don't need Him because they're smarter than He is. Look at Romans 1, verse 20. The world is without excuse. When you look at creation, think about it. You look at the world. You know, I've had the privilege of being in other countries. I've had the privilege of going and travel and see the beautiful places all over the world. The landscape that man couldn't paint. They couldn't create it. They couldn't do it. It's all the handiwork of God. And the Bible says, man's without excuse. You can see all of the beauty. You can see the grandeur and the majesty. You can see the order in life. You can see all these things that are natural. How did it happen? Look at man. Look at man. Look at how we're created. Look, do you know that if a foreign substance comes into your body, automatically your body will attack it to drive it out? And then once it drives it out, that it will store it in a memory thing? And you have thousands of these memory cells in your body, that if that substance ever comes in again, it drives it out. Who created that? How did that get in there? How do you explain it? Knowledge is great, but knowledge without God is frivolous. It's useless. It's not going to help you. I'm not here telling you it's wrong to get an education. I'm not telling you it's wrong to have knowledge, but it's what you do with that knowledge. If secular knowledge becomes your God, and it begins that you don't need God anymore, that knowledge becomes a liability. There's no knowledge that's greater than God's. None. And if you're looking for satisfaction in being knowledgeable, but it's not divine knowledge, then you're wasting your time. It's never going to satisfy. There's no satisfaction in wisdom. So you're talking about the same thing, Keith. No, I'm not. Do you know a lot of people have knowledge, but they don't have any wisdom? You know people like that. You know what knowledge and wisdom is? Wisdom is the application of knowledge. We have a lot of people that are knowledgeable, but it doesn't do them any good because they don't have the wisdom to apply it. I know people that can quote chapters of the Bible, but they couldn't live one sentence. What good is that? What good is it to have the knowledge but not have the capacity to know how to use it in order to produce wisdom that will be beneficial in this life and prepare you for the next life? You see, it depends on what you do with knowledge. Knowledge is a good thing. It depends on how you use it. And if you don't use it to gain wisdom, you remember what Solomon asked for when God says, I'm going to give you anything that you want. Think of all the things that Solomon could ask for. Think, what if he'd asked you that? I might have said, well, I'd like to live to be 1,000. That'd have been a bad thing if you allowed me to do it. But you see, he wanted wisdom. But what did he want it for? He wanted it to be able to discern between good and evil so he could lead God's people. You know, Solomon showed a lot of wisdom in what he asked. And what he asked was a very respectful thing. That's why God blessed him so much in his life. But you know the sad part about Solomon? He had all the knowledge, but he didn't have the wisdom how to use it. Other people would come from all over the world, they'll sit at his feet and gain the knowledge that he had. And all the knowledge he had, he never applied it to himself. What a waste. You see, he had all that knowledge, but yet he didn't know how to apply it. You got to have wisdom. There's no satisfaction without divine wisdom. No satisfaction found in pleasure. Read Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Solomon tried every pleasure. Think about this. This is not just somebody. This is a king, the mightiest king at the time, the wealthiest man at the time in his time. And here's a man that had power, privilege, wisdom, understanding, the ability, authority, and he could do everything this life had to offer. Everything this life could offer to bring you happiness, Solomon could try it, buy it, build it. Anything that he could do, it was at his fingertips, and he did it. And when he was done, what did he say about it? When he's looking back on all the things he tried to do to bring him happiness, what did he say about it? He said it was vanity. He said it was vexation of spirit. He said it was striving after the wind. I never understand why people don't learn the lessons that this life cannot satisfy you because they've never studied Ecclesiastes. Because it can't provide you happiness. I've seen people allow a moment of pleasure to destroy a lifetime of good. I've got a good friend. Probably he was somebody I looked up to. He was somebody that meant a lot to me. He was somebody that I thought God blessed him in talent. I mean, he had talent. He was the most talented debater I ever heard. He was the most talented preacher in many ways I had ever heard. And yet I watched this man over a period of time, over a period of 3 years, just destroy his marriage, destroy his life, and destroy the good that he did, he could have done. And you know the only one that benefited from his demise? He straightened up his life. He corrected it. But that voice for against Satan and against evil was silenced forever. And he's the one that benefited. But you know the sad part is he did it to himself. He did it to himself because he tried to find satisfaction in the wrong thing. He didn't study the Bible that he preached all of his life. He didn't apply its wisdom to himself. It's not found in culture or wealth. All the money in the world is not going to take away your problem. The culture is not going to take away your problems. There's always going to be problems. People that got money got problems. You know, probably the one that I remember reading this in the 70s. Elvis Presley, when he died, had $1 million in his checking account. How'd that work for Elvis? He couldn't go anywhere. If he wanted to take his little girl to a amusement park, he had to rent out the whole park after midnight. If he wanted to take her to a movie, he had to rent out the whole movie thing. And he had to live his life. He had to live it in seclusion. And he had everything money could buy. He had worldwide fame. He was the most known person on the planet. He died very unhappy. It didn't bring him what he thought. And it never will, because he can't do it. All these passages teach that wealth is fleeting, doesn't last. What will provide satisfaction? Good friends and good food. You know, some of you here are my dearest friends on this earth. And I wouldn't trade you for anything. Can you have too many good friends? Can you have too many people? You know what? If I had a crisis in my life, and I've had some, I turn to men and women who only love me because I was a member of the Lord's church. And they were members of the Lord's church. And they helped me through some of the darkest hours that I ever had. And I wouldn't be here today if it wasn't for an elder in a church in Indiana when I was at the darkest point of my life, where I didn't care if I lived or died. And I thought my life was over. And you know that man, he would sit up and listen to me every night to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. He had to go to work the next day and he'd be pushing me out the door. And you know what? He never gave me any advice. He just listened. That's what I needed. That's when I needed. But he helped pull me out of a pit. I always had God. But if you don't turn to God, God can't help you. I knew God was there. I never blamed God for my problem. I knew he was there. But you know the worst place for me to be when I was in that fog? You know the worst place for me to be was? Right here. I see the families coming in. I see the kids coming in with her from the class. And I didn't have that then. And I was just choking. I couldn't breathe. I just wanted out. I didn't blame God, but I didn't let God help me. I tried to handle it by myself. And I almost destroyed myself. It taught me a very powerful lesson I've never forgotten. I'm never going to be too ashamed to talk about if I need help. And I'm telling you, some of you are going to hear from me. This people have been asking, how are you handling this retirement? I'm not handling it too well. I've been at this too long. And I'm not handling it real well. I'm thankful for Rita. Rita keeps me level because I'm trying to cope. But you know, there's people that I would call, and I know they'll not give me any advice. They'll just listen to me. And I can go to God's word, and I can read, and I think, Keith, you forgot about this. God told you this. Why aren't you listening? You see, good friends, people who have, how many times do you hear in a prayer, men and brethren of like precious faith? What's that mean? Who understands the difficulties of living a Christian in a broken world better than another Christian? Who understands that better? I wouldn't trade them for anything. They mean everything to me. And that's why God, in His Word, emphasizes our physical relationship. That's why we are to love one another. You know why? Because we're going to need each other. This world's a difficult place, folks. God knew that we would need each other because we're not going to be able to depend on the world. You can't depend on the government. You're going to have to depend on each other, and you're going to have to depend on God. God's always there, but we need other people that we can lean on. That's why God gave us each other. It's one of the greatest blessings He's given us in His Word, is our relationship in Christ that we share. And we do not use it very well. Kind words. Remember Connie Adams, a number of years ago, was talking in a lectureship in Florida. And he was talking about the challenges of suffering. And he had lost his wife some years before that. And his second wife, Brother Adam, just turned 91, I believe, I read the other day. And his wife, Bobby, his second wife, which was also the name of his first wife, she's not doing very well and she's having a lot of health issues. But he said, I remember when she died, when his first wife died, he said, there were hundreds of people at the funeral home. He says, and they came up and they spoke to me. He says, I couldn't tell you to this day what they said, but I could tell you they were there. And I remember the hug. I remember the handshake. I remember they told me they were praying for me. You and I better never underestimate what a kind word can do for someone who's really struggling under the weight of difficulty. How hard is that to do? How much effort does that take to be kind and compassionate to people when they need it? And who should know better than that than us? But I've seen a lot of uncompassionate and unkind things said about brethren to each other during this pandemic. And I'm thinking, what are you thinking about? Where is your mind? Where is your heart? Have you forgotten who you are? Have you forgotten that you're supposed to be edifying and building one another up, not tearing each other down? What are we doing? We've forgotten who we are. Good wives and good husbands. I'm not ashamed. You know this, when I was here, I'd be nothing and would not have accomplished anything in my life without Rita. Not a thing. One of the most difficult things that I had to deal with was not having my children because of circumstances beyond my control. And I did not handle it. It was consuming me. It was eating me from the inside out. The one that helped me bear that burden was Rita. She helped me bear it. She helped me understand it. She helped me bear it. I never would have got through it. It would have destroyed my faith. I'm telling you, there's things in this life that will destroy your faith. Don't you think they won't? There are things that you can have happen in this life that you have no answer to, and it will cut you deep, and it will destroy you if you let it. That's why you got to have a good marriage, because you're going to need each other, because this world's a rough place. And we need to be able, and all these passages teach about the love between a husband and a wife and how valuable and how important it is. It can help you live in a broken world. Live in the present. Don't get too far ahead of yourself. I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. I don't know what's going to happen next year. You don't know what's going to happen next year. Live in the present. Live for today. Remember what Matthew 6:33, take no thought of the morrow. The morrow will take care of itself. Just, you know that song that became very popular, One Day at a Time? Now that became a big million-seller hit. But you know, if we can learn to do that, if we can learn just to dwell on today, you know, yesterday's gone. All you can do is learn from it. You can't change it. You can't rewrite it. You can't unwind it. You just got to let it alone. Tomorrow, you don't know if you got it. So don't worry about something you don't have. You know, it's enough to deal with today. Just deal with today. That's enough. And let God help you deal with today. I remember when my brother was killed in a tragic accident. And I remember I was over in Europe and I had to come home. And I remember going in to see my mother. And I just said, "Lord, I'm 20 years old. What am I going to say?" All the way traveling back from Europe, I'm thinking, how am I going to help my mom and my dad? They just got divorced. How am I going to help both of them carry this burden? I'm beside myself. And I come to my mom's house and I'm going in there and my mind's just going 100 miles a minute. What am I going to say? And I look at and I didn't see my mom. And I go into the bedroom. There's my mom on her knees with her head bowed. And here's what my mom said. "God, I don't understand this. I know it's just part of living on this earth, but I can't bear this burden alone. You help me with today, and we'll deal with tomorrow. I have never forgotten that. My life forever changed that day in understanding the preciousness of life and how difficult death can be and how traumatic it can be. And I have always tried to be compassionate. I've always tried to be understanding. And I've always tried to understand that this life can throw you a loop that you're not ready for, that you haven't prepared for, and you're going to need help in dealing with it. God can help you. Live for the present. Don't worry about problems before they happen. Do a good job. Do you like what you do? If you don't, find something else. Why live your life in a job that you just hate? What kind of example you set to your kids if you come home every night complaining about your job? "I hate this job. I hate what they want out of me. I hate what they pay me." You just over and over again. If you do that over and over again, what kind of example are you teaching your children? Find another line of work and learn to enjoy the work you do. Let me give you another side issue on this. Have you ever wondered why so many of our young people we lose to the world? Now, I've contemplated this over the last 10 years. And, you know, I think in small part we may have done this to ourselves. How many times on the way home from church, when your kids are sitting in the back seat, complain about the preacher, complain about the decision the elders made, complain about this member, you complain about that member, and then your kids get to be 18, 19, they get on your own, they don't want anything to do with the church, they don't want anything to do with religion, and you think, what happened? I took them all the time. We were together all the time. What happened? Maybe what happened is they saw the hypocrisy of your life and they didn't want any part of it. Maybe that's what happened. We need to like the work that we do, and we need to be thankful for God that we live in a country where we can work and do what we choose to do. And we need to be grateful and thankful for it. Except without complaint, that life is not always fair. In Philippians chapter 4, verse 13, in bringing this lesson to a close, the Bible says, "I can do all things through Christ, which strengthens me." I don't have all the answers. This world has always been broken. Sin broke it. And it will always be broken because sin will always be something we have to deal with. But the good news is, God provided a remedy for sin. God provided a remedy, and he also provided things that will help us if we will turn to them, use them, and be grateful for God that he has. Let me ask you one thing before I offer the invitation. During this pandemic, how many of you increase your prayer life? You know what? Prayer has taken on a whole new meaning to me during this pandemic because I saw what it was doing to brethren. I saw what it was doing to churches. I saw what it was doing to God's people. And I prayed fervently that we would consciously wake up and realize what we were doing to ourselves. Because I knew God was the only one that had the solution, how that can be fixed. Brethren, this pandemic didn't divide us. This pandemic just brought to the surface what something that was already there. We need to understand there will always be problems in the world. There will always be things that we will not fully understand. There will always be things that seem to, that we're not getting all the answers or all the information we need, but we need to trust God. We need to put our head down. We need to remember who we are. We need to keep our focus on the goal that lies before us. And we need to try to help other people see that trying to figure it out by the world standard doesn't work. And we need to give them a better solution to their problems. I ask you this morning, and I ask you tonight, who should have handled this pandemic better than anybody else in the world? And the answer to that is us. God's people. God's people should have been the epitome of how to handle this adversity when it came to our door. I don't understand it. I don't know what's true, and I don't know what's wrong. But I do know one thing. I do know one thing. The problem is not greater than God. And I know that it can be solved if we just allow God to direct our lives and to keep our mind on the ball and keep our mind on what's important. This world can be crumbling around us. It doesn't mean that we allow it to crumble the church. And if we do, it's not the pandemic that did it. We did it. Because we didn't trust God. And we didn't trust His wisdom. Brethren, I don't have all the answers. But I know who does. And that's God. And if you do it His way, even though the world may be crumbling around you, your world won't be crumbling. And you'll be able to rise above it. And that's what God expects us to do. You know why? Because it's a song that we just sang. This world is not my home. This is not where I want to be forever. Is this where you want to be forever? I don't think so. You want to be here. So keep your focus on where you're going to be, where you want to be. And do the best you can. Understand there's going to be lies, there's going to be ups, there's going to be downs. There's going to be things you understand, there's going to be things you don't. But never let it change what you do know. You know that God loves you. You know that God cares for you. You know that God's wisdom works. And you know that God has never lied to you. And you know in Hebrews 13, some of the most comforting words in all the Bible, I will never leave you nor forsake you. What can men do to me? Nothing. Nothing. They can only take my life. But that just means I'll get to be with God sooner. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. Ladies and gentlemen, don't forget who you are. Don't forget the power of your Father. And don't forget the power that's in His Word and in His ways. And don't forget to talk to God. When you feel the world crumbling, when you feel it squeezing you and you think you don't know what to do and you're getting depressed and you look, talk to God. Let Him help you. Turn to other brethren. Help each other deal with the moment at hand and not allow it to destroy every good thing in your life. If you're here this afternoon, and you're not a child of God, brethren, being a Christian is not going to take away all your problems. Matter of fact, it's going to give you some more than you didn't have before. But I can tell you this, there's never a better life that you can live than the life of a Christian. Because it has all the upside. Because it makes you a child of God. It gives you become a member of the household of God. You become a joint heir. You have the promise of heaven. And you have the assurance that God will never leave you nor forsake you. And you also have the promise that God will never lie to you, and that whenever you talk to God and whenever you need him, God will be there and hear. And he will answer. How much is that worth? God gives it to us for free. You don't got to pay a thing. He already did that when he died on the cross. All you have to do is accept it. Believe it. Repent of your sin. Confess his name before men. Submit to baptism. And then walk with him through life. Let God help you walk through these uneven. You know, all my life I used to remember men praying, help us as we walk through the uneven pathways of life. When I was a young kid, I said, what's he talking about? I understand all that now. That uneven pathway of life, we've all been traveling that, and we will travel as long as we live here. We're going to travel the uneven pathway of life. Don't travel it by yourself. Let God help you. The world is broken. But God has a solution how to save yourself in a broken world. Trust him. Follow him. Do it his way. And we'll come out. No matter what's going on around us, we will secure what's really important. And that's a home in heaven. And if we can help you, we bid you to come forward. As together we stand. As we stand.